physical effects of cannabis use is to increase, drastically increase your melatonin output. So I mention that as, you know, as given that try as we might to decrease the microwave radiation that's out there. I mean, we can, you know, do what we can when we can go to the hearings or call in and whatnot, but it's still out there and it's still in many ways beyond our control at this point. So I mention that as, you know, one of the healing herbs on this planet is cannabis, and that is one of its effects, is to help us keep our melatonin levels way up. So at least that part of it is going, you know, we're going to have some relief. But the other thing I wanted to mention, working with Karen on this, and I've been catching the show intermittently, but I don't know if Karen gave out the number for the Planning Commission.
No, I didn't.
And that's so important, because not everybody can come to a hearing, but everybody's got a telephone pretty much these days, even if it is a cell phone.
True.
And we will allow cell phone use to make these calls. But would you recommend giving Mary Alsip's number out?
No. Well, I don't know. I think the Planning Commission would probably be...
And what is that, the 420?
She's not the person making any decisions.
Well, how do you get a message to the Planning Commission? Do you have a number for
that? Oh, gee. Marilyn has those numbers.
Well, I'm going to just then, I'm opening the phone book right now, and I'm going to give a general number for the Planning Commission in the city of Santa Cruz.
That or folks can certainly come tomorrow night to the Loud Nelson.
Well, you know, I'm speaking to all the people who probably aren't going to come out, and I think if we have a telephone number, they're hearing such incredible information, we might get them to make a call.
That's good. Well, while you're looking for that number...
Well, I've got it right here.
Okay.
And hopefully people heard me talking and got their pens out. But it's right in the blue pages, actually, part of the telephone directory under Santa Cruz, City of Planning and Community Development. And the main planning and zoning information is 420-5100, 420-5100. 420 for the melatonin and 5100 for the planning department. And they can tell you how to get a message to the Planning Commission before Thursday to weigh in on making our downtown area safer for shoppers, safer for people to gather, because right now there's so much radiation coming off that roof. And thank you, Karen, for doing a lot of the work to help people be aware of that.
You're welcome. And I received quite a few calls from this article, and one of them is a guy who is a senior who lives in El Centro, which is right near the Palomar. Now, the people on either side are getting more dosage than the people directly underneath.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy, he hasn't been too well lately, and he was living there in May and June, and he noticed that he had a dull headache and vertigo. Then he left town for several months and improved, came back, same area, and he's experiencing this again. So after he saw my article, he has decided to leave based on fears for his health. And I just really concerns me that, you know, this is all going on with so little information, and that there's problems like this happening, and just as Tom suggested, just because it happens to seniors, everyone assumes, well, they're old, you know, they're getting, that's the reason for their discomfort. And that's really not, it's not a necessity to get sick just because you've gotten on in years. There is a lot of reasons that, you know, this is happening that people are just not aware of. And this information has been purposely kept from the public, and it's been known ever since the 40s by the military. And it's just outrageous that, you know, this kind of systematic suppression of information has taken place. In the 40s, there were radar operators who complained of headaches and fatigue, and this was most of them, as I understand it, complained about these things. And in Russia, the authorities and scientists took these complaints into consideration when setting their safety standards. In this country, apparently, they just ignored it, or they just they just decided to ignore it, and the safety standards are much, you know,
excuse me, we're getting, we only have about 30 seconds left.
Thank you, Tom.
So, folks, that that's going to be tomorrow night at the Loudon-Nelson Center at 7 o'clock. That's Tuesday, tomorrow. And what is the contact number if they need further information that way?
That would be 458-4505. That's Karen Stern's number. And this is Susan again, and thank you very much for having me on the show, Tom.
Well, thank you very much, both of you. This should be a great talk tomorrow night.
Okay. Yeah, come on out.
All right, folks, you got it there.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
Bye.
Well, good night, one and all. Next Monday.
Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line our good friend Ron Brown, and we're going to be talking about what's happening in the world from a financial point of view. And, of course, Mr. Snow, the Secretary of the Treasury, had made some remarks last week about the fact that the dollar was down, but that was nothing to worry about. Everything was just fine. And if it were to drop further, why, it would just help us meeting with our deficits. And as long as the drop was in orderly fashion, why, you know, who was really worried about the fact that the value of everything, of course, he didn't say this, but the value of everything that the American people have worked for and have and dollar-denominated accounts or CDs, pensions, in bank accounts, in annuities, insurance policies, everything they have is gradually losing value in relationship to the international currencies. Upon Mr. Snow's remarks, why the euro went up to $1.23 to 1 euro. It used to be 86 or 87 cents to the dollar. Now it's $1.23. That's a pretty good increase, isn't it, Ron?
Yeah. I was reading just a little bit ago that in the last 2 years, the dollar has dropped 42% against the euro.
But that really doesn't bother the elitists who run Washington, D.C., who think they're so much smarter than we are, and if they can just drop the dollar down, then, of course, they can make our exports more economical, and that they can, of course, get more people back working. And but then they're not going to get more people back working. The problem is that IBM just announced it's going to send, I don't know, 1,000 of its highest-paid jobs overseas, hiring people over in India. And more of our major corporations, AT&T, Bank of America, our banks, everything is being sent overseas. because there are people there who can speak English and work hard for a lot less than they will here. And our corporations really have no loyalty to America. Their loyalty, at least most of them, is to this idea of a new world order, a new world religion. And the American people haven't figured out what's going on yet. They don't understand that there's a conscious effort to send our jobs and to send our industries overseas. We're even subsidizing many of these industries. The plan is to impoverish the American people, and they're not going to wake up until it's too late, and they are in the same situation that the former middle class of Argentina is in. So what's your take on what's going on, Art?
Well, I think you're hitting it right on the nose. The last 20 years, we had a false prosperity built on this artificial dollar strength program. Now, of course, they've changed it. Now it's a dollar weakness. It's good for us. But for 20 years, the world wanted to trade with us, so they were orchestrating their currencies down or lower versus the dollar, which gave us this euphoric feeling that we were King Kong and the dollar was the strongest currency in the world and prosperity would last forever. And, of course, it became a bubble, and the bubble had to pop, and it initially popped back in the year 2000. So now it's just a long, agonizing drop as the dollar seeks its real value, and it's way, way, way overvalued still.
That's very interesting. My friend John Leffler was telling me about an article in Fortune magazine called the $44 trillion abyss. So I had to look it up this morning on my computer, and it's you have to use the numerical 4. It's 44 trillion, so you put a dollar sign, 44 trillion abyss, and you'll come up with this article in a Fortune magazine by a very prominent economist who simply says that that's what we owe, and there's no way to possibly pay it. This is what we have said we were going to pay. This is Medicare payments, Social Security payments, other payments, and you're talking about $44 trillion we don't have. Unless you triple the taxes, level of taxes, why, the whole thing implodes. And they think it's going to implode. Fortune magazine, it's November, the last part of November, but you can pull it down off the internet, as I did this morning. And there are a lot of really hard economists, I mean intelligent economists, who are very worried about what's happening. Of course, the average individual doesn't want to hear bad news anymore. The average patient wants to hear they have cancer, but you're sure better off to tell them so that they can make preparations for it and maybe even come up with a cure for their cancer. And as far as the cancer that's eating away at the very vitals of our economic system, people better understand what this is all about. Now, these two economists who came up with this report had been commissioned by Paul O'Neill, who was the Secretary of Treasury, and when he came up with this report, tried to show it to the President, they fired him and put in this fellow Snow in his place. But this whole new Medicare bill, and I think the public has to realize, this whole new Medicare bill doesn't have anything to do with saving older people money as far as their prescriptions are concerned, because a lot of people are going to lose their drug coverage that they had from the corporations they had. But know that the corporations, they had medical care and they were paying for or a large part of their medicines. It all has to do with trying to change Medicare to actually charge the people a lot more for Medicare, to do away with the system, to set up a two-tiered system, one for the poor folks that can't afford anything else where they can ration access to health care for them, and the other is to try to get people who could afford to pay into HMOs or managed care systems where the corporations will limit their access to health care, and then people won't be mad at the government, they'll just be mad at the corporations. But it really doesn't matter because this is all manipulated because they know Medicare is going bankrupt. It was to cost $9 billion at the year 1990. That's what they told Lyndon Johnson back in 1966. This has only cost $9 billion a year by 1990. Well, it cost about $40 billion. Last year it cost $256 billion, and it's going up astronomically from here on out. So we got a real problem there, and with so many other things on our economy, and the average person isn't being told, our attention is being focused on the flu epidemic. Oh, the flu epidemic. Terrible epidemic. Worst epidemic. You better get your flu shot, even though it's not going to do any good. You better get your flu shot. And so they focus our attention on specific issues, but never on the real issues that are going to determine who survives and who is impoverished in the coming months and years. So why don't you just tell us your take on what's going on, Ron?
Well, I was just to update the author you were talking about. I was listening to an interview that he had on Jim Poplava's financialsense.com.
Oh, you heard that, huh?
Oh, yeah, I heard the interview, and he upped from $44 trillion to like $54 trillion because of this new drug bill that President Bush just passed. So, you know, we're bankrupt beyond our means, yet we just keep promising the people something to keep them appeased, and you know, we're going to have to pay for it here pretty soon, and the world is now in the process of rejecting the dollar.
So the Economist wrote the article about the $44 trillion abyss. Now is it up to $56 trillion?
Over $50 trillion. Right. I don't remember the exact figure. Once you get past, you know, 20 or 30 trillion, what's another trillion, right?
Well, once you get past, you know, a $20,000 or $30,000, that's a lot most people can imagine.
Well, it's real simple what's going on. You know, the dollar has been the world's reserve currency for, what, the last 50 years, well, since 1943, so I guess that's 60 years now. And that gave us the benefit of letting foreigners finance our deficits, because foreigners, the central banks of the world, kept their reserves invested in dollars because the dollar was the world's reserve currency, and as a result, all world trade was denominated in dollars. So it gave us leeway to just spend beyond our means, and we have done it real well. And so our nation is now in debt beyond any hope, and the world now sees that, and they are now starting to slowly phase away from their overdependence on the U.S., not only for trade, but for their investments. And the reason it won't collapse overnight is they have so many trillions of dollars invested with us, and they still need us for trade, that they just can't walk away. You just don't go to the teller and say, cash me out for $9 trillion. So they have to slowly, gradually, methodically work their way out of their dependence on the dollar. So I see the dollar ratcheting its way lower over the next 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years. Who knows when it'll end? But the very people who are dumping dollars, and here's what's important for people to understand, the very people who are trying to get out of their dollars are the very central banks that will step in to support the dollar if it gets too weak. Because if the dollar collapses, then it doesn't benefit anyone. They don't get their money back, and the whole world trade collapses. So they will try to keep the thing stabilized enough as they just slowly, gradually phase out of dollars.
And you have to understand that the people who invested in the dollar, in other words, whether it was Chinese or Japanese or Germans, of 4 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, have lost somewhere pretty close to 40% of what they invested in dollars. Well, you can only keep doing that for so long, and pretty soon, why, you're losing real money. So if you have $1 billion here, that $1 billion is now worth $600 million. You've lost $400 million, and you've got to explain that somehow. And then, of course, investing here with our interest rates so low, so you're getting 3 or 4% interest, and you're losing 10 or 15% a year interest in value of the currency. So they have to get out of the currency. They'd be foolish not to. But as Ron says, they can't pull out all at one time, because they know that this would collapse the dollar. And with the dollar collapse, then they're sitting with all these dollars at home in their central bank. So, more and more people are beginning to move towards the euro. And what about the gold dinar? Is that being traded fairly widely within the Muslim countries?
I don't know how much it is. I know that is the plan. I know it was put into place. So I'm sure it's starting to grow as more people see it as the alternative.
But now there's a currency to challenge the dollar, and that's the euro. Now, we have to understand that the leaders of our secret government really have no loyalty to America. They have done everything they could to create this strong European Union, which will have about 450 million people in it. Half again, almost twice as many as we have here in the United States. Not quite twice as many, but almost twice as many. And with 450 million people and a sound currency, and we're assuming that they're going to be able to make it into a sound currency, because they're doing all the things that they should do over there. They're just doing away with all the Medicare benefits or the socialized medical benefits and cutting back on pensions. And the people are yelling and screaming, but, you know, once you got the animals in the cage, they can yell and scream all they want. It's not going to do them any good. And that's what's happened to the people of Europe. They've given up their freedom to this supranational government over which they have no control. Oh, they have a chance to elect their representatives, but their representatives are bought and sold on a regular basis. That's what democracy is all about. When you no longer have the rule of law, you got the rule of men, and whoever you may elect him to office, but they'll twist his arm and batter him or blackmail him, and they'll get him to do what they want to. And so the people there are losing their freedom. They probably, really for all intents and purposes, in Europe have lost their freedom, but they may very well end up with a solid currency, the euro, and there are people in Europe who really want the euro to replace the dollar as the currency of the world. Isn't that true?
Well, that's right. Then, the main thing is the euro doesn't have to be, all it has to be is stronger than the dollar. See, it is now the alternative to the dollar, because after 40, 50 years, the dollar has built up this massive debt structure, and it's just inherently weak now. So the euro is the new kid on the block, and it doesn't have all the baggage that the dollar has developed over the last 40 years. So people are now to perceive that as a safer play than the U.S. dollar, so they're starting to phase out of their dollars into euros, which by definition will make the euro stronger.
Of course, before the Second World War, why the British pound, the pound sterling, was the reserve currency of the world. But the multiple wars Great Britain was in, and a prolificate or outright excessive spending destroyed the stability of Great Britain. Great Britain's a second-rate country today. Her only claim to fame is that she's subordinate to the United States, tagging along behind us. But Great Britain that once ruled the waves now waves the rules. Great Britain once had an empire that spanned the entire world. And now, of course, she has a second-rate nation with, the people of live in Great Britain. Most of them are totally disillusioned. They have that sense of hopelessness, but there's nothing they can do. There's no place to go, and so they stay there. But what was once a great and vibrant nation has become a second-rate nation because they corrupted their currency, and we're following right along, aren't we? Just like ancient Greece did the same thing, and ancient Rome did the same thing, at least the western branch of the Roman Empire in Rome, certainly the eastern branch in Constantinople had a stable currency. And most people have forgotten there were two branches of the Roman Empire, one in the west, one in the east, and the eastern one lasted up until the mid-1200s. But they had a stable currency. They had a gold dinar, and they didn't allow their currency to be debased as our currency has been debased.
Well, that's right. And, I don't know what else to say about that. You know, here we are 50 years later, and we're doing the same thing. We're the policemen of the world and just spending beyond our means to try to protect the whole world, and we can't do it, of course.
And we can't keep fighting wars all throughout the world. These aren't being fought to protect America. The American people have to understand that our leaders have a globalist agenda. We've got troops stationed in Korea. They've been there for 50 years. We've got troops stationed in Japan. They've been there for 55, 60 years. We've got troops stationed in Europe. Why do we still have troops stationed in Europe? Almost, 60, 70 years after we sent our troops to Europe in 1940, and this is, 60, 63 years later, we still got troops, massive numbers of troops in Europe. And we've got troops in Africa. We've got troops stationed all throughout the world. In fact, in many of these places, we're supporting the dictators there, which really doesn't make any sense if we're really in favor of democracy.
Well, you're right, and of course it's developed over the years, and how do you stop it? And of course we just spin ourselves into total debt. So it's the day of reckoning has arrived, and it's just a matter of time. So the only thing that people can do, unfortunately, we can't change it politically right now, but we have to become good stewards to protect what we've developed and not become a victim of it. And there are ways to prosper from it. But people are going to have to learn to think differently. They're going to have to learn to turn the TV off and not listen to the spin masters on Wall Street in Washington. And they're going to have to do some serious thinking on their own, because the old way of thinking is not going to cut it over the next 5 to 10 years.
Well, we certainly see the price of gold going up. I saw, 407, 408, something like that today? What was it?
Right at 410.
really got up to 410. The silver is up about 550. So platinum's up. I saw it looked about 820 today. You know, I remember when platinum was down $100 an ounce. That was quite a long time ago. And but we're seeing the commodities are going up. And it's not necessarily the commodities are going up. It's the value of the dollar is going down. And this is what people really can't understand. Because all they see is what's around them without understanding that the only reason that all the goods we buy at Walmart are cheap is because the Chinese have tied their currency to ours. Our currency drops, their currency drops, so their goods continue to be cheap. Why should they worry about a free market? They have a dictatorship over there, a ruthless, tyrannical dictatorship. But you'll feel good to know that our government really feels very good about it. In fact, an article I was just reading now about the president really likes the Chinese leaders because they've been so helpful in our dealing with North Korea, who incidentally have been backed at every step of the way by the Chinese communists. But be that as it may, somehow our enemy's enemy becomes our friend, even if our enemy's enemy has been helping our enemy. So we are in a terrible situation where so many of the products we used to produce are being produced in China. In fact, even Japan and Taiwan and Korea, South Korea, are shipping their jobs off to communist China. It will be the great producer of the world. It was what Napoleon said one time, let China sleep, for when China awakens, the world will tremble. Well, the world's going to begin to tremble. They're going to undercut us in every side, undercut our production, and eventually impoverish America. What a terrible, terrible tragedy that's being helped by our leaders right at the present time. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Ron Brown. And Ron, you were saying that people are going to have to begin thinking differently than they have before. How should people be thinking? What should the average individual, in your estimation, be doing at this time?
Well, most Americans, you know, the last generations, the U.S. has been the most prosperous nation in the world. The dollar has been the strongest currency in the world. And so people in America don't think in terms of monetary value of the currency. They think in terms of the percentage increase in their investments. So, you know, for example, if a person was sitting with $100,000 to invest today, and a year from now it appreciated to $110,000, the logical thinking would be, I've done pretty good. A 10% return is not bad in anyone's league. Well, you don't really know until you say, what will the dollar buy? And as we just pointed out earlier, the dollar has lost 25 to 30% over the last year, year and a half. So if you're earning 10% on your money and it's losing purchasing power at the rate of 15 or 20 or 25% a year, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that you're behind the eight ball and the treadmill's going faster than you are. But see, we have to learn to think different because that's the way people think, just the percentage increase. So we're going to have to learn to think in terms of the value of the currency and the depreciation. And I think there's a great delusion that's going to come across the American scene, and that is everyone can see is the monetary authorities are pumping money into the system. They're liquefying and they're just printing money hand over fist to try to keep this monetary system from imploding on itself. Deflation is the one thing they cannot allow to happen because it will happen very, very quickly. And so they are printing money and they're driving all values up. You can see the stock market has gone, over 10,000 again. But it's all based on inflated money, which has taken its toll on the value of the currency, so people can't really see what's happening to them. Their investments are going up, but the purchasing power of it is probably going down, or will very shortly. So they have to think in terms of buying something that's tangible and real that will keep up with the price of inflation or the devaluation of the currency. And, of course, historically, that has always been gold and silver.
Okay, well, I certainly agree with you. And I think that the most difficult thing for people to understand is what inflation is all about. And inflation is not rising prices. It has to do with expanding the monetary supply. And the rising prices then are a secondary result of that. And there's a wonderful book we carry. It's called Fiat Money Inflation in France. I'm sure you know the book, don't you, Ron?
I've given many copies away over the years.
Well, we are actually not in the position to give them away, but we actually carry the book along with Bastier's The Law, and you can get the two of them together from Radio Liberty if you're interested by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. But this is one of the best books ever written, because it was written probably 150 years ago by a man named Andrew Dickinson White, who was the dean of Yale University, as I remember, and he was writing about something that occurred 100 years before, about the time following the French Revolution, and what happened in France after the revolution as far as money was concerned, and how inflation corrupted the society, how it broke down the morals of the society, and, of course, as a byproduct of that, eventually the economy collapsed. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I guess this evening is Ron Brown, and we were just chatting about what do you do in times like this? What do you do when there is inflation? Of course, they tell us that there's hardly any inflation at all, 2 or 3%, everything really looks great, but this really is not true. I mean, you'll see what's happening. The price of homes are still continuing to go up. Yes, your goods you buy at Walmart are not going up because they're produced in China, and that's tied to the American dollar, but down the line, of course, all of this is going to change. This cannot go on indefinitely. We're financing the war in Iraq by borrowing from our grandchildren. We're financing the Medicare bill by borrowing from our grandchildren because there is no money to pay for it. It all goes into the national debt. We're financing everything that we're doing, all the massive pork programs, all the massive federal giveaway programs, all the federal government control of education. It's all financed, and our great-grandchildren will pay for it, not only with the sweat of their brow, but perhaps with their freedom. So, Ron, for our listeners have just returned from the Great Northwest. You were saying that you feel that people are going to have to get something of tangible value to survive what lies ahead, because if they depend simply on traditional investments, stocks and bonds and certainly anything that's related to the dollar increments, annuities, CDs, things of that sort, pension funds, insurance policies, they're going to be in real trouble. So what should they be doing, at least with part of what they have, to try to protect themselves from the obvious financial crisis that is coming? And whether they can keep this thing going through the election next year, I don't know. I sure hope they can, because, of course, they want to elect George Bush. They don't care about what happens after that. You know, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. They know the whole thing's in real trouble. They just want the American people to know, and they want them to be happy and, you know, content with the way things are going come next November, when there's going to be another election. So what should people be doing to begin to protect themselves?
Let's first take a little analogy. Let's step out and see how serious. See, as long as you have 2-4% inflation, it's kind of like a geese nibbling at your ankles. It's not comfortable, but you can live with it. When you start having the type of inflation and destruction of the currency like we're starting to see now, it's not like geese anymore. It's like crocodiles taking off a leg at a time. You see, you can't lose 15-20% a year for very long and still have anything left. So the analogy I like to give, the extreme example, was Germany 1920-21. And in, let's say, 1921, it took 3 German Reichsmarks to equal 1 U.S. gold-backed dollar. 1.5 to 2 years later, it took 12 trillion Reichsmarks to equal that same dollar.
Well, people are going to say that could never happen here. Our central bank wouldn't allow it to happen.
Well, let's see. In Germany, 1921, it was the Treaty of Versailles, where Germany had lost World War I, and the victor said, "You must pay reparations to us." And basically, they said, "Look, we don't have any money. We're broke too. We spent everything we had trying to fight the war." And they said, "Tough, you owe us the money." So Germany basically said, "Well, if you want the money, we'll just start running the printing press," and that's what they did. Well, we don't have the Treaty of Versailles in America today, but what we do have is a welfare state that you don't dare not provide for. So the worse the economy gets, the more people are unemployed, so the more programs you have to develop. And so I cannot see our politicians not spending what needs to be spent to keep the geese happy, or at least trying to, you know, appease them. So I can see the same powerful forces that are going to force us into a hyperinflationary environment, because right now the market is trying to deflate. We're trying to destroy this debt structure that has been built up over the last 90 years, and the politicians are saying no matter what, we must find a way to print money faster than the market can destroy it. And of course it gets, you're chasing your tail, because the more you do that, the more you devalue the currency, and therefore the more you have to print. And so we're getting caught up into a hyperinflationary mentality, and therefore it's going to become important for people to understand how they have to protect themselves. And that's where you get the gold and silver. Gold and silver is true money throughout all of history. It's a tangible wealth that has tremendous demand, and people have wanted gold and silver throughout all history. So gold and silver is a refuge from the destruction of the currency.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to have to take a break here. And when we get back, if you're out there in the listening audience, we'd love to hear from you. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, of course, we have to keep on living and functioning in this society. But if you, anyway, of course, you can protect at least part of what you have. You should be considering this, and depending on your age and all, you can vary what you're doing. But if you don't have at least something that is tangible, when this thing begins to fall apart, and I believe it's going to, I think it's only a matter of time, why you're going to be impoverished like the people of Argentina, the middle class there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do, 5 hours every day. As you know, we're heard on radio stations across America, we're heard on shortwave, we're heard on internet, we're heard on satellite, and we do have other networks that we work on besides the one you're hearing tonight. But, of course, it's an expensive proposition. If you believe in what we're doing and would like to partner with us in our effort to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We have so many 800 numbers, it's hard to keep them all straight. But that's the number you call, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like to get a free copy of our latest newsletter, and the latest newsletter will be ready in about, a week to 10 days. It's the December newsletter, and it really gives you the story of Judge Roy Moore. It tells you what actually happened at the trial there, where they wouldn't let any television cameras in. They wouldn't let anybody record what happened. It was a kangaroo court, because they had to establish the precedent that anybody who dared to stand up against the federal government was going to lose their job and was going to lose everything. And yet, if you understand what the issue was about, the issue in Mobile, Alabama, was not about the Ten Commandments monument. It wasn't about politics. It was about whether or not a public official could acknowledge God. That's what Judge Myron Thompson said, and that's what it really was all about. Can a public official acknowledge God? And, of course, the federal court had decided a public official could not acknowledge God. That's why the monument had to be removed. And then, of course, we have to get into the background of how that came about and why the Supreme Court took God and prayer out of our schools. And if you read this newsletter, you'll never look at the world quite through the same eyes again. So if you'd like to get a free copy of the newsletter, why, we'll be glad to send you one. Of course, we hope maybe some of you would like to subscribe to the newsletter regularly. All of our newsletters are eventually posted on the Internet at RadioLiberty.com. That's www.RadioLiberty.com, and we welcome your going there, and you have our permission to pull down our newsletters, to copy them, to distribute them to your friends, to try to get them to understand what's going on. And I will tell you today, there are an awful lot of people who don't want to hear anything. They've learned how to control the minds of the American people and put them in sort of a state of suspended animation. And all you can do is warn them what's going to happen. That's your job and mine. We are to be the watchman on the wall, described in Ezekiel 33. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, our guest is Ron Brown, and Ron's been analyzing what's been happening economically for a long period of time. Ron, you've actually prepared a report on silver, haven't you? Would you like to tell our listeners how they can get that report from you?
Sure. It's called The Unbelievably Bullish Case on Silver, and if you'd like a copy of it, just call me at 1-800-595-0561.
That's 1-800-595-0561. All right, now why are you so bullish on silver? Why not, if people are going to invest in something that, you know, not as bulky as silver, like gold or platinum?
Well, I kind of facetiously ask people, if I called you and said, get your pickup truck and come by and I'll load it up with gold, would you find a place to store it? And, of course, they'll say, of course I would, Rod. I said, well, buy silver because it's going to be close to the price of gold before this is over. See, right now the gold-to-silver ratio, gold is trading at over 400 and silver is at 550 or so. So the ratio is somewhere around 74, 75 to 1. In other words, gold is 75 times the price of silver. Well, historically, that's way out of whack to begin with. And I believe before it's over with, you'll see a minimum of 15 to 1. And there's a lot of people out there, more knowledgeable than me, that are saying it'll go to 5 to 1, or even there's a few people saying silver will approach the price of gold.
Well, this is because there's a shortage of silver. It's not necessarily a monetary metal, although it has been in the past, but it has many, many commercial uses today. And we're really just running out of silver supplies, aren't we?
Well, the world has been consuming over the last 40 years, I would probably say on average, approaching 100 million ounces more consumption than there is production for the last 35, 40 years. So what was a glut of silver, let's say back in 1960, 62, when all the nations, if you'll recall, used to use silver as their money, in 1963, Lyndon Johnson decided to demonetize silver because the industrial demand was silver was forcing the price of silver up to the point where the cost of silver and a dime was more than 10 cents. And when that happened, they just took the silver out of the coinage. And if you really step back and analyze that, what they really did, because every nation in the world immediately followed suit, is the world demonetized silver and dumped the silver that took 4,000 years or more to accumulate. They just dumped that into the industrial market, saying, industrial users, you can have it all. And so obviously what happened is when you dump, we're talking somewhere around 10 billion ounces of silver worldwide that was dumped into the market, it drove the price of silver down to the point where the silver miners had no need to go out and mine more silver. And it told the consumers of silver, just keep consuming all you want because we got such a glut there, they will never use it. And so here we are 40 years later, and now there is 20 times... Everyone listen carefully to this. There's 20 times more ounces of gold in the warehouses around the globe than there is silver. We have literally consumed the silver because once you use a thousandth of an ounce in an electrical point, you never bother to recover it. It's gone forever.
About how much of silver is used every year? Do you have any idea commercially of various products, photography, things like that?
Somewhere approaching 800 to 900 million ounces.
And how much are we mining? Do we have any idea?
Less than 500 million ounces, around 500 million ounces.
So there's about a 300 million ounce shortfall. But, of course, there's an awful lot of people who have silver coins out there that if the price went up high enough, wouldn't they melt those on down, sell them and melt them?
Sure. That's what the world has been dependent on for the last 40 years. You know, in the 1980 crisis when silver went to $52 an ounce, they were melting bags down. I heard that the last 3 months they melted 150,000 of those $1,000 bags of silver down and put them into bars to be used by industry. So the question then becomes, how much silver is out there? How much have we depleted, and how much is left for the next go-around? And, of course, after Y2K, the dealers I work with told me that for 6-7 months, every bag that they bought back went back to a refiner who melted them down and put them into ingots. So that silver, I would guess that we have melted down somewhere between 90 and 95% of all the silver coins ever minted.
So there's not that many around there that could be pulled back in if when the shortage does finally come.
Well, an indication that there's not many out there is, I'll give you an example, in January of 99, as we turned the corner into the final countdown to Y2K, that's when people started to jump on the bandwagon to buy gold and silver. Well, in the first 2 weeks of January, a bag of silver went from $3,800 my cost to $5,800 my cost 2 weeks later. That's a 50% rise in the value of those bags. And what's interesting is the price of silver, the spot price in the markets, didn't even budge. So it was simply a function of there wasn't enough bags to go around when the demand surged.
But a lot of people then turned those in after Y2K when the crisis that people had anticipated didn't occur. And so is that then what they've been melting down in the meantime?
Absolutely. You know, I've confirmed that through my different dealers that I work with. So the next time around, there's going to be even less silver. And what's interesting is we have probably 10 to 20 times as much paper money. Think about it. In 1980, when silver hit $52 and we had that inflationary blow-off of the Carter years, the Johnson Carter years, the total national debt was less than $1 trillion. So here we are 20-something years later, the national debt's admitted to over $7 trillion. You mentioned the $44 trillion. We just upped that to $55 trillion, and yet there's probably one-fourth as much silver to go around as there was then because of all the silver we've been consuming. So you've got 5, 10, 15, 20 times as much bogus paper money ready to chase one-fourth as much silver at best. And back then, silver went from $5 to $52 in a year.
Well, now our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you have a question for Ron. What's happening in other countries? I know in India why the Indians have always used silver as a means of security. This was something a woman wanted. You wanted a lot of silver jewelry that gave her a certain element of security. Are the Indians still consuming large amounts of silver? Do we know?
Absolutely. Their demand has been steady, if not increasing, over the last years. It's probably their way of defending India from the demise of the dollar. So, yeah, the demand there is rising. And, of course, we know China recently opened up something called the Shanghai Exchange. And for the first time in over 50 years under communism, the Chinese people are now legally can buy gold and silver. The figures I heard for the first 2 months is that the Chinese people were averaging 1 million ounces of silver per day.
1 million ounces of silver a day, and then how much gold were they getting?
Their finance minister put out a report where he projected a $36 billion of Chinese money going into gold over the next year. Well, that's well over world production. So I think the Chinese are very quietly, silently, a lot of people that follow the silver mine have heard of the term the stalker. There's some big investor that's sneaking in and buying gold and silver whenever the market is weak and buying it, and the figure I saw today was over $6 billion in the last, you know, several months or so.
Now, this is in China?
Well, the implication is, or the belief is, that it's going to China.
All right, fine. We've got Nathan calling in. Incidentally, if you're out there and would like to call us, the number's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Nathan, do you have a question or comment?
Yes. Good evening to both of you gentlemen. Yeah, the news that you were talking about earlier about jobs leaving the country to me is very, very disturbing, and I want to bounce an idea off of you gentlemen. In fact, I'll take the answer off the air pretty much, but let me just set the scenario here. There are three basic models of government. We'll just boil it down. It's far more complex than this. We'll boil it down to the the king and the oligarchy model, the democracy or the majority rule model, and then the republic model, the rule of law. Now, the founding fathers very wisely chose the republic as the rule of law model. By contrast, though, our corporations have what you might call an oligarchical model, where you have people at the top and they make the decisions and they seem to have the bonuses and whatnot. Do you believe that, while I don't agree with the protesters and the anarchists, they want to create a democratic model that's pure worker-run, do you think that it is possible, and I'll take this off the air, do you think that this is possible that corporate charters should be chartered in a Republican manner? As an idea, I'm not saying they should, but as an idea, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Okay, fine, Nathan. Would you like to comment on that, Ron?
I'll comment on it backwards sort of way. Our politicians, our leaders, who take an oath of office to uphold and defend the Constitution, are there to defend our Republican model. We've been sold a bill of goods, going back to the free trade, which allows or keeps us from defending our own economies. So, in my opinion, it would be up to the leaders to set the stage. You know, why would our leaders allow our corporations to be forced to have to compete with slave labor and allow those products to come in and undermine our production? To me, from the get-go, now it's kind of late in the game to start doing it now, but we should have had the tariffs in place that kept our country free and prosperous for the first 100 and something years. We should have had the tariffs in place to keep the foreigners from undermining our sovereignty and you know, economic strength. I don't know if that answers his question.
Well, I think he wants, of course, to have the corporation somehow chartered under a Republican form of government. Yes, they should be chartered under a Republican form of government. We basically have a ruling oligarchy right now, as far as I'm concerned, because our leaders of both political parties are not loyal to the United States. They're loyal to this internationalist dream of a one-world order under, of course, a ruling elite. And to really understand what's going on, you need to go back and read Plato's Republic. Plato advocated a ruling oligarchy, a so-called just ruler over the oligarchy, a massive police state, and everybody else would become a serf. That is the direction we're headed today. And until people understand there really is an invisible government, there really are people who feel that they're far superior to the rest of us, who have made plans on how this world system will be set up. And, of course, they are betraying their oath of office. Globalization is programmed to impoverish the American people. And it should be very obvious to anybody with two brain cells that are still at least functioning, that what is happening is not happening by accident. If anybody still believes that globalization is going to open up the markets of the rest of the world for our products and we're going to really prosper from it, they got to be incredibly naive. Every time you pick up your paper and you read about, isn't it great the productivity of our society is increasing. It went up 7% last month, the productivity. Now, what are they saying? Our corporations are producing more? Well, some of them are, but most of them are not. What they really are saying is that they can produce more goods with less people. So the productivity is a measurement of production by the worker. And when the productivity goes up 7%, that means that 7% of the workers are going to lose their jobs. This is what they're really talking about, and those jobs are not coming back again. And so what we're really seeing is a jobless recovery. What's a jobless recovery? Well, the corporations are making more money, but of course there are no new jobs going along with it. And I think it's all smoke and mirrors. I think it's a very clever gimmick. It's all being done with borrowed money, borrowed from our children, from our grandchildren, from our great-grandchildren. And this money will never be paid off. And the whole thing is going to have to eventually collapse. And with that, of course, will come the loss of freedom. This is exactly what's happened in every great empire in the past, and it's happening here. So I hope that answers Nathan's question. Now, if you want to get in touch with Ron, then it's a very interesting report on silver, because I think you need to know what the statistics are His number is 1-800-595-0561. And really, you've, and I have never seen anything quite like this. I've been following this since, I guess, since the 1960s for 40 years. We've never seen a short play or squeeze like is coming up in silver, at least during our lifetimes, have we?
No. It's amazing. See, the monetary authorities who are trying to keep this Ponzi scheme that we call the monetary system going know that gold and silver are kind of like a barometer of confidence in the paper system. So as the inflation continues to ravage, the monetary authorities had to suppress the price of silver artificially through manipulations so that the people would look at the barometer and say things must be fine, because certainly if there was a problem, gold and silver would be rising. So they've been manipulating the market, dumping the gold out of the vaults of the central banks. And the silver market's a little different. They've been manipulating it basically with paper contracts. And see, that's just a sham. And once the physical demand for silver overwhelms them, then you've got it's going to be unbelievable what happens when that short squeeze comes on.
Well, Richard Russell, who's one of my favorite pundits, he's been around as long as I have. He was writing these newsletters 40 years ago when I got started on this. And Richard Russell has said he anticipates that the value of the stock market will cross the price of gold. In other words, he thinks the stock market eventually is going to go down to about 3,000. He thinks the price of gold is going to go up to 3,000. People laughed at him back in 1980 when he made a similar prediction, but he was right then. I wonder if he's going to be right this time. What do you think?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt. In fact, he says it's going to 3,000 and higher. And, you know, that sounds absurd if you're thinking in terms of regular dollars, but if you realize that the dollar is being repudiated throughout the world, you know, if the dollar goes to zero, then where does gold go in terms of dollars? It goes to infinity. So just looking at the dollar value of gold won't tell you anything until you say, okay, what will that buy in the marketplace? You know, if gold goes to $3,000 and a banana's $10, then you, what have you really accomplished?
You got an awful lot of bananas, that's for sure.
That's right. But you see what I'm saying. And so, but Richard Russell, which is very interesting, and I was reading him when I was in graduate school back in 1966. Richard Russell has always liked gold. Now, he's a stock market man. That's what Dow Theory is all about, is you know, value in the stock market. But he's always used gold as a refuge when the markets and the economy or the monetary system was in jeopardy. And so he's always recommended gold at certain times, but he has never liked silver. And in that recent thing you were talking about where he predicted 3,000, he came out in the same breath and basically said, silver is the most undervalued asset or commodity in the world. It will play major catch-up to gold, and the gold-to-silver ratio will drop to 16 to 1. So if we can round that off to 15 to 1, divide 15 into 3,000, which is where he's predicting gold will go, then he's actually predicting $200 silver.
Well, nobody can really tell what's going to happen, but I think that there's some people that are a lot smarter than I am. I think Richard Russell is really one of the people you can depend on. I think James Dines, I think a great deal of those two, stock market analysts, and I've followed both of them for 40 years. I wish I'd taken their advice, but never did. But I will tell you that these people really feel that these things are going to happen. I think that we know that Warren Buffett, the sage of Omaha, invested heavily in silver here 3 or 4 years ago, and Warren Buffett has stopped putting money into American currency. He said he will never invest in American currency again. He's putting his currency in other countries, but he's not telling us which countries it is. So I think that tells us a lot. I think we have to look at people who have been successful investors through the years, see what they're doing, and unless, of course, you are brilliant and can do this full-time, why, more power to you. But I really rely upon people I feel that really have a much better grasp of this than I. Well, let's go to Herman, who's calling in here from, of all places, Carmel. Hi, Herman. How are you doing?
Good evening. Fascinating program. Thank you for having your guest back. If the price of silver skyrockets, won't that open up a lot of non-productive mines again, and wouldn't the market mechanism bring the price back down and or cause people to switch from silver to other things they might use in place of it?
All right, that's a very legitimate question. How would you respond to Herman?
Well, yeah, eventually it will. It's just like in 1980, silver went from $5 to $52 an ounce. That's 1,000%. Well, we've made our money at that point, so I will be telling people to switch from silver to gold or get out of the silver market and go into real estate. We'll just have to see where things stand at that point. But right now, silver is the greatest investment from a risk-reward standpoint. I see zero, or maybe 50 cents at most, downside risk over the short term. Yet I see an upside potential of 2,000% easily. So, yeah, there will be a time. You don't get married to any one investment, but you try to buy the one that has the greatest upside potential and the least downside risk. And I would argue that silver is probably the greatest investment of world history in that regard.
Well, I think from Herman's point of view, though, what about opening the mines? I mean, that will eventually provide sufficient silver. And Herman's absolutely right. But how long does it take to open a mine and get it working? What, 3 or 4 years?
At least. And the problem is that over the last 10 to 15 years, as the price was held artificially low, the silver mining industry went down the tank. The companies were struggling just to make ends meet. They didn't have the excess dollars to go out and explore for new mines. So the mines we have, the ones that have been shut down, or the ones that haven't been shut down, we've been depleting the ore reserves, and yet we're not replacing those reserves with new exploration. So you're going to need much higher prices to get the money out there exploring. You're starting to see it, by the way, right now. But it takes probably 5 to 7 years from the time you start exploring before you bring the first ounce of silver or gold out of that mine.
So I would say to Herman, you sell your gold at your silver at $200 an ounce or $100 an ounce, and I wouldn't worry about it. But the other thing, the point that he's making is, well, couldn't industry shift to other specific metals, rather than using silver, use some other metal for what they're using it for now?
That's one of the strongest arguments for silver, in that in most of the applications where it's used, there is no substitution for it. And even if there was, the amount of silver that's used in each unit is so small that you could double, triple, quadruple the value of silver, and it wouldn't really affect the marketability of that product, because the percentage of the silver cost in that item is, so nebulous compared to the value of the product.
Now, what about the photography? We're always saying, I've been hearing for 40 years that they're going to do away with photography, so silver is going to lose so much of its value, because silver has always been a bulwark of photography, but everything's changing. And, of course, I don't think it was true until recently, when we saw the emphasis on the digital cameras, and we're hearing now that Kodak and many of the other companies, photography companies, are going into digital. What impact will that have on silver?
Well, I think it's a myth from this standpoint. One, digital, as great as it is, it's still a small percentage of the total photography. I don't know about the people out there watching, but I think most people take pictures once or two or three times a year, or for Christmas or the baby's birthday or holidays or something. And so one of the ways that people do it now is they go down and buy a $7, $8 disposable camera and take the pictures, and that's been the biggest growth item in the photography market, much bigger than the digital impact. Secondly, if you have a digital camera, you have to use a computer that uses silver, right? You have to put it on a CD that uses silver. And if you want a picture that'll last, you have to go back to silver paper, because the digital photography doesn't last over 2 or 3 years, it fades out. So people that are taking pictures and want to keep those pictures for posterity end up taking it back to Kodak and say, would you transform this to a picture for me?
All right, Herman, do you have any other comment? Because we're just about out of time. Oh, we lost Herman. Well, we're still just about out of time. Well, Ron, I want to thank you so very much for being with us. Do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners?
You know, I would just to kind of cement what we've been saying, year and a half, one, in 2001, July, silver or gold was at $250 an ounce. Today it's $400 an ounce. What is that, 60% rise? The dollar has dropped 42%. So you accomplished what you wanted to accomplish, and that is the gold has kept up, more than kept up, with the devaluation of the currency. And that's all we're really trying to do. We're not trying to gloat and celebrate on the demise of our country by making a fortune. We're just trying to preserve our wealth.
All right. Well, thank you so very much for being with us. Our guest has been Ron Wilson, Ron Brown. His telephone number, 1-800-595-0561. Ron, thanks so much for being with us.
Pleasure to be with you, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. And this is Dr. Stan just reminding you that freedom is never free, and that human societies, like human beings, live by faith and die when faith dies. Well,
this is
one of the big problems we have in America today is there is a conspiracy against God. Faith is dying in America. The new God that's being introduced in churches across America is sort of a comic Santa Claus. He loves everybody and never punishes anybody. We should never be fearful of him. We have just go ahead and sin and do what you want to. There's no punishment for sin. There's certainly no hell. And faith is dying. Pray for America. Pray for revival. And please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Stand back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And I would ask you to, if you would like to give us a call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, but please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line our good friend Bill Sardi, who's a health journalist, who's done some great articles. In fact, we have him on regularly because he's always bringing some very insightful material to us. Last time we talked, it was on a different program, but he was pointing out the fact that we are being manipulated. Our attention is being focused on the danger of the influenza virus, and how important it is to get the vaccination. Oh, we're just about out of vaccine. Oh, you're lucky we can get the new vaccine for you. We've got this very expensive vaccine, flu mist, and we can squirt it up your nose, and this will give you protection because you can't get the regular shots. And yet, of course, if you look at what's known about these regular shots, the virus that they prepared for is not the virus that is infecting people throughout the world. So why are we giving them the shots when this is vaccine is not for the current organism that or the current virus is infecting people all across the world? 87 million flu shots have been given in America. We're all out of the flu vaccine, apparently, or just about out of it, except for the flu mist, of course, and it's not for the type of organism that is infecting people. Hi, Bill. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, great to be with you, and of course you're right on with us. We actually have 4 decades, experience with flu vaccines. We've never been able to reduce the mortality rates from the flu. What are we taking the shot for? And I thought that was it. So, we have, about 30-some thousand estimated. I don't know whether these are real numbers, because it seems like disease control people kind of manipulate these numbers, so we're not exactly sure whether these are, body counts. But there's no hiding the fact that, that certainly people may succumb to the influenza virus. The problem is, that is the very young and the very old. The immune system hasn't developed, or it's no longer functioning well at one end of the spectrum or the other, the young and the old. And so that's where we have the problem. Unfortunately, the vaccines work the least well in those groups. And so I'm not sure that you would ever really bring down the mortality rates by using these vaccines. With 280 million people in the population and only 83 million getting vaccinated, there's always a shortage. This nonsense about there's a shortage this year, there's always a shortage, and of course we never see a pandemic from any of these things, even though over 200 million people never get vaccinated. So, this all seems to be drummed up, and of course there's a reason for it this year, as you're pointing out. And it's the flu mist. We want to drive people to this flu mist vaccine. YF Labs is the main organization that's kind of promoting this whole thing. It was developed by a vaccine company, and then YF is the kind of the marketer of it all. And now we're going to see this wonderful, of course, you don't get a needle in the arm now. You can just have this put up your nostril and next thing you know, you're vaccinated. Now, you do need 2 doses of that when you do get the flu mist. Again, they haven't hit the right strain. And by the way, I do know that the flu season does seem to be coming on early here this year. But most people have colds rather than the flu. Some of you might be aware that, the flu is more achy and more fevery. Colds are more nasal and so on. So you do see people with the colds, but I'm not sure we're talking about the flu per se. So the flu shots cost anywhere from $46 to $70, whereas your standard little flu shot in the arm costs about $10. So, this is a tremendous increase in cost, and YF Labs is going to spend millions and millions of dollars over the next year or two to try to convince us all this is the way to go. In fact, they have a 3-year, $100 million campaign to encourage the use of nasal flu vaccine to physicians that's what they're going to do. And of course, it's just going to drive up the cost, and they're going to force this on health plans by saying, we've got a shortage here. These people need it. And of course, for all of you listening here, they rigged the study to get the approval on flu mist. This is the first year it's available. It was approved in June. Isn't that curiously interesting? And they rigged the deal. They only tested this on 20,000 people that were perfectly healthy and middle-aged. They did not test it on the very young, under 5 years old, or people over 65.
So, Bill, that is the area where this is the dangerous. I mean, it's the very young and the very old. 95% of the people who die of influenza are over 65 years of age. So why are you testing this on people who aren't going to die?
Now, we also have another danger here, and that is when you've only used a flu vaccine like flu mist on 20,000 people, you can't get a real picture of what this might do in a population with millions taking it. And of course, now as the headlines now saying that Walmart is going to help distribute the flu mist and it's going to be widely marketed. But when you read the package insert, it says that avoid close contact with immunocompromised individuals for at least 21 days. What they're talking about there is if you take the flu mist, that is a live vaccine. You've got the real live critters in there, guys. And the other one is kind of a dead vaccine, but this one is the live one, and that means you've got the real thing here, and it could shed, that is, spread from one person to another, especially with close contact. So, you know, someone down at work gets this and then snuggles up in bed with somebody at home, and then they get it. They might be pregnant, so then the baby gets it, the kids get it. You could start a giant pandemic with this flu mist, and it would be too late before we could even stop it. So, you know, this is highly unproven. And again, it's the same, it protects against the same strains of the flu as the experimental version that was made last year. They didn't even change it this year. I don't know why they're making such a big deal about this Fujian strain of the flu, F-U-J-I-A-N. This was in Australia late last year, and it did not cause a widespread pandemic, nor was it highly lethal. So they're making such a big deal out of it as if it's some unusual thing that's going to kill us all off. And I know the colds are going around. I'm not sure it's the flu. And now CNN reports that the panel that approved the flu vaccine this year did so reluctantly, and they went on to say 75% of the cases this year are this Fujian strain, but they couldn't make a vaccine against that strain. It just wasn't working in the laboratory. It just didn't mix. It didn't culture. They have to make it in a little strain of chicken eggs and so on, and it just didn't work, so they couldn't make it this year for that strain. And so, therefore, this was reluctantly approved. They had 17, 18 members on this committee. Most of them voted for approval, but they said we really had no choice. Otherwise, there would be no flu vaccine. Well, of course, the commercial interests won out. There's money to be made here. And, of course, the public's being scared into this flu mist. Well, we're out of the other one. Let's move everyone into this flu mist. And by the way, you don't get any new needles. And here's another shocking part of the whole story: is flu mist, a nasal spray flu vaccine, alternative to flu shots for people who want to avoid getting sick. Well, you mean those symptoms that we're supposed to get? So if you just stand there and do nothing and you don't get flu mist, you will have far less cough, runny nose, sore throat, and headache, and chills and muscle aches than if you took flu mist itself. Let me give you the figures here. 10.8% of the people who took nothing, that's a dummy placebo pill, had the cough, where it was 13.9% with flu mist, so that's about a 3 or 4% increase. Runny nose, 27% of the people on placebo sugar tablets, and 44.5% if it was with flu mist. So that's quite a jump there. Sore throat went up from 17 to 27%. So it's about a 10% increase. So
why would they authorize this when you get more symptoms with the treatment than you do if you don't have the treatment?
I am at flabbergasted. I don't know how they ever approved this thing. It is crazy. Obviously, you do get a body reaction because you're getting a live virus. So certainly you will have a little bit of a fever and chills and headache and so on because you're getting a live virus. Of course you will. Of course, that's the very thing you're trying to prevent, is the symptoms. So this one is befuddling to me. I'm lost here why we're doing that. It does pose a risk of the shedding and spreading the very virus, and then, of course, you'd have people saying, well, now more flu mist, and the thing begets itself. The more flu mist you vaccinate people with, the more infection you're going to see, and therefore the more flu mist the doctors are going to recommend.
Now, the thing that really bothers me, though, is the way that they coordinated this thing to the mass media. I mean, you can't pick up a newspaper without seeing the story of the flu epidemic. And, of course, there's an article I was reading today. They said the big one's coming. It's just a matter before we have another pandemic. Of course, we don't know when it's coming, but if we can be sure, we've had two in the last or three in the last century, and there's going to be another major pandemic. It's coming, you know. You better prepare for it now. And, of course, the inference is you better rush out and get your immunization so that, of course, you're not going to be a victim whether it's 10 or 20 years from now, but there's going to be another pandemic. And, you know, you read these articles carefully and you realize we're being manipulated by the people who control the media. You hear about this on television. You hear about it on the radio. You read it in article after article after article and article in all the newspapers, as if somebody is coordinating a massive propaganda campaign to stampede the American people into getting either the shot or, you know, and the shot is with a vaccine that isn't going to work. it isn't going to work because, you know, it's for the wrong virus. But that doesn't really matter. They've used it all up because, you know, what good is the vaccine, you know, after the epidemic's over? So we got them to use all the vaccines so the vaccine manufacturers will make their profit because they made the vaccine for the wrong organism. And then now, of course, they're going to push the flu mist, but they're creating a real hysteria. You've got to get something. You've got to protect yourself. And yet, this isn't for the right organism either, is it, Bill?
No, it certainly isn't. Neither the flu mist nor the standard flu vaccine. And, of course, another admission along the way is that, of course, we're concerned about our good friend thimerosal, that's the mercury, that's been a preservative inside most vaccines. These were the childhood vaccines, and of course now it's they're saying that Centers for Disease Control, it says flu vaccine in the United States does not contain thimerosal. It says small amounts are in there. In other words, it's saying it's thimerosal-free, but at the same time, they're admitting there's a small trace amount in there. What do they mean? When they went to make these thimerosal-free vaccines, what they do is they put the mercury in. It's to kill unwanted bugs and to attenuate the vaccines, to calm them down and kill them off so that you have a dead bug in there and, of course, kill any other bugs that might get in there at the same time. And then what they're doing now is just removing the thimerosal, but there are still traces left in at the end of the production of the vaccine. So there is no such thing as thimerosal-free, folks. You're still getting mercury injected into your body somehow. It just may be a trace amount, but that's the whole point. These things are trace amounts. Now, any of you with autoimmune diseases, this includes people with certain forms of arthritis, lupus, certainly diabetics, certainly people also with asthma and other eczema and so on, you really want to stay away from any vaccine whatsoever. It's the accumulated vaccines, I believe, that are triggering many of these autoimmune disorders, and I'm really trying to get people to just stay away. And I know people feel like, well, I'm going to get hit by a train if I don't move, if I don't do something. Well, there's so many wonderful natural things you can do. We keep recommending vitamin C, vitamin E, selenium, and zinc. There's no sales pitch attached to those. If you're actively having forms of infection, we suggest you seek out sources of oil of oregano. Licorice root is wonderful. Vitamin C with quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N, quercetin, available in health food stores. Quercetin is from red apples, red onions. It stops the influenza virus, the adenoviruses, which is your cold viruses. It stops the SARS virus. It stops the polio virus. You know, it's a really wonderful natural substance. Quercetin plus vitamin C, I take it every day. I never get on an airplane without it. I never travel without it. It's a wonderful thing, and for people with allergies, it's a natural antihistamine anyway. So, you see, we have some natural alternatives. You'll never hear about them. So, the best you can do, there are some flu drugs and so on, but they'll only cut the symptoms down by a day. You'd be better off with these natural things anyway. And if you went through the winter months, it just seems smart to me, if you're in an at-risk group, maybe you just start taking the oil of oregano every day for a couple of months during the flu season, which kind of starts at the end of December here and runs on through for a month or two. So if you're in an at-risk group, if you have a poor immune system and have a history of all this, this would be a good way for you to go. It'd be a lot better than some of these other medicines that they're trying to push on the public.
And the interesting thing is that the fatality rate with influenza is primarily 65 and older. And the reason is because the older people have a poor immune system. Usually the nutrition is poor. But my friend Dr. Russell Blaylock has said, look, we can, with the proper nutrition and vitamins and the various things you've talked about, get the nutrition status for the elderly, you know, tremendously increased, so they're not going to be susceptible to the influenza, and they're not going to have to worry about it. So if you can get the immune system acting in the older people, and you could probably to some extent do this in the younger people as well, and the children, then you wouldn't be having the fatality rate. But instead of that, of why it seems that the people within government have determined that, no, you've got to take your vaccines. When you don't take your vaccines, why you endanger everybody else? In fact, I fear that one of these days they're going to come along and say, you know, this is going to be mandatory. A matter of public health. It's like everybody wearing a seatbelt. Everybody's going to be vaccinated because it's for the common good. And we know because we're from the government and we're here to help.
Well, of course, they're going to do this through the workplace and so on. They're going to say you need the flu shot. And it's just disappointing to see the public herded around like little sheep. And you go down to the store down here, and the market is looking for some publicity and getting customers in. So, you know, the flu shot's available down here at the grocery store, and you see this long line of hundreds of people. And you're going, what are you folks doing? You know, I mean, this is just crazy. I guess everybody just goes on cue. Don't you guys check anything out?
Well,
it's just terrible. See what's going on.
I'll never forget when I was about 1960 when the Sabin polio vaccine came out, and they just put a drop of the live virus there on their sugar cube, and I can remember everybody lining up to go get their sugar cube so that they wouldn't get polio. And this was an amazing basically a vaccine, and the Sabin and the Salk, they were both amazing vaccines. The trouble is that they were grown in the kidneys of the rhesus monkey that contained a cancer-producing virus, and we infected 90 million people with a cancer-producing virus, and everybody lined up to get it. And they've lied about it ever since then, because they know the American people understood that they were given a cancer-producing monkey virus, the simian virus 40, back in the late 50s and the early 60s. Then we'd lose confidence in the vaccine manufacturers. Why we'd lose confidence in the government leaders? So they simply lied about it ever since.
Well, they not only lied about it, but see, these are stealth viruses. Viruses are guys that remain on board throughout your life. And then they erupt when your immune system is down or when you're under stress or something like that. A perfect stealth bomb inside your body, because you'll never be able to blame that vaccine you got years and years and years ago. But that's when it was introduced, and then later on, of course, you succumb to it. So you wonder why it was done. In fact, that's the very reason that they had trouble with this Fujian strain, because they were going to use a form of it that was cultured in animal cells, and then the FDA people said, wait a minute, we might spread another disease again. Oh, what was the first one you spread? See, they're admitting there have been some in the past, so this is the kind of problem. And, you know, we do see so much coercing us into vaccines these days. Now, just on the childhood vaccine side of life, as you know, we have vaccines for children, diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis. And now, you know, they've got the polio virus. That would be a fourth one. And, you know, they've been trying to force this hepatitis B vaccine upon children in school. So now, in order to make sure that it's coerced on us, is GlaxoSmithKline has made their first, what they call, pediatrics formula. And so it's the 5-in-1 vaccine. It takes the diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis, polio, and hep B virus, sticks them all in one, and now your kids have to get all five. You can't refuse the hep B vaccine. So now you've got to get all five. Well, you know, you're ganging up five vaccines on children all at one time. We've never had an experiment like this. I don't know how much of this you can go on. Let's just put 25 in there. Let's go for 35. Let's just keep going. I mean, this is just going insane. And, you know, one of the interesting connections we found in investigating this SmithKline Glaxo pediatric vaccine is that one of the people on the board of directors at SmithKline is also the CEO at Reuters, which is the British news organization. So with such a strong, powerful position, they're able to get to the news media and say good things about these vaccines and, of course, hide any bad information because they're affiliated and connected to the news media and the vaccine companies. They have a crossover in their board of directors, and in this case, SmithKline Glaxo certainly does with Reuters, one of the largest news organizations in the world. And it's, and of course, it's no hiding that. That's just the way it goes. So SmithKline-Glaxo essentially owns Reuters. I believe it's one of the companies that they do own, and they have connection over that. So you can see that the drug companies are going to probably buy news organizations so they control information about this. So this is the kind of information the kind of world we're facing here as we see these things pushed upon us, our children, and of course people lining up blindly for these kind of things. If you want to find good sources of information about the flu vaccine and the flu mist on the internet, I would suggest you go to vaccineinfo.net, vaccineinfo.net, and Dr. Sherry Tenpenny talking about some of the dangers of the flu mist vaccine. And, of course, the wonderful work of Barbara Lee Fisher at the National Vaccine Information Center at 909shot.com, 909shot.com. And you'll see Vaccine Information Center. And, of course, they've got wonderful information there for you on the Internet that are really highly critical of some of this, the vaccines that are now being pushed on us. And we need to take a look. People need to be more aware. One of the interesting sidebars to this whole thing is the FDA is going after now the mercury in cans of tuna, if you can imagine this. And yet, while we're making such a big deal about the mercury in the tuna cans, they won't do anything about it in the vaccines. They had to get coerced and pushed into it, and there's still a trace in there. As much as they're saying it's thimerosal-free, it still has it in there. And, of course, I want you all to understand that Japan, they eat more fish than any other country in the world. They're the smartest people going, and, I don't see any brain problems or troubles with them eating their fish over there, and yet they're saying that we now have to label the tuna that we eat because it has a natural form of mercury. Fish do have a natural form of mercury, but it is methyl mercury. It's not the ethyl mercury that's in thimerosal. So, you know, there is a difference, and some of it goes right through your body, and you won't retain it, whereas ethyl mercury, it can get in. So there is a difference here. All this manipulation, I don't know, we're afraid of cans of tuna now, and we don't do anything about the vaccines. The world is going crazy. It's upside down. It's hard to figure it out. I see here a report in the New York Times that if the SARS virus hits the United States, they're going to start quarantining, and they expect resistance, people who don't want to be quarantined. They may have a SARS vaccine by then. They say they're trying to develop one if there ever is an outbreak here. But here's an officer, a health officer, saying we're ready for the next outbreak. If there's a SARS outbreak here, we intend to have electronic forms of monitoring the public, detention facilities, quarantine zones, and so on. They're preparing to wrap us up and put us in certain detention camps and so on. What's this all about, and could this be misused in order to go after political enemies and so on? And how dare you even argue against the government's plan for vaccinations and so on? So, you know, it's getting crazy here. We just seem to be losing control. We have no ability to say yes or no. I don't see any consent forms in regards to these vaccines. You just blindly go down there, and away you go. You get the shot. You're not fully informed of all the drawbacks. Dr. Monteith, you've certainly seen the Guillain-Barré syndrome. For the public listening, you want to explain it to them?
Well, Guillain-Barré is a progressive polyneuritis. It's very, very similar to polio, and it's one of the complications of taking flu influenza vaccine and certainly other vaccines. But when you get this, you just develop this progressive paralysis, and it can go right all the way up to your bulbar area and decrease breathing, and then you die. Now, ordinarily, the Guillain-Barré recovers, unlike polio. There is tremendous recovery, but you'll end up with 5 to 10% of these people who never do recover, and they have a permanent paralysis as a result of this. In fact, Dr. Len Horowitz's mother took her influenza shot because, after all, everybody over 65 should have one of those. And she got Guillain-Barré, and she died from it. And this is something that happens. I have seen patients, even younger people, who have taken influenza shots and gotten various forms of Guillain-Barré. But unfortunately, we just don't talk about that sort of thing. But one thing you'd said, the fact that they're going to put five vaccines into a common shot, and you're going to have to take all five at one time. Now, each vaccine they put things into it to increase the immune response. And, of course, you're priming the body for an immune response. All across the civilized world, at least specifically here in the United States, assuming that we are civilized, there's a tremendous increase of asthma. The rates of asthma are going up. And they just can't figure out why asthma is becoming epidemic in our children. And, oh, maybe it's because they have pets around. It seems that it's the pets that are responsible. Oh, it's the pesticides and the herbicides or something of that sort. They use all of these other excuses, and yet the most obvious one is the vaccines. The more shots you take, which are designed to create an immune response, the more asthma we have in our children, and we're crippling our children all across the country. I believe that there is no evidence at all that the vaccines are not involved. They should be able to prove that they're safe. They can't. We're seeing a massive increase in juvenile diabetes. We're seeing a massive increase in immune disease in our children, and nobody wants to suggest it could be in the vaccines because there's a lot of money to be made. And remember, the people go from the FDA. And what do you think that they would do when they retire from the FDA? Why, they go to work for the vaccine manufacturers. They go to work for the drug companies. And if you don't think there's an incentive, simply go along and get along, because you know you're going to get a big, fat job when you get off. It doesn't matter how many people are crippled because of the decisions you make. After all, the vaccines might be helpful, and we shouldn't hold the vaccine manufacturers the same levels of that we do others. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment. We're going to have to take a little break, and when we do, we'll go to Jeanette, who's calling in from Watsonville. We'll welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But I just ask you to watch your newspapers and see how they're using them to create a mass hysteria to drive people to the doctors for their flu shot or their flu mist vaccine. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Bill Sardi. And Bill, before we go on, before we get to Jeanette, why don't you tell people how they can get to your website and get some of those great books that you've written?
Okay. Of course, we love to invite people to my website, askbillsardi.com. And of course, there's wonderful reports there on hormone replacement therapy, on acne, cholesterol, autism, and many other things. They're all free reports. You get them all. There's a wonderful book there on the collapse of conventional medicine. You're free to download it and read it. And, of course, it's all fully authenticated and has lots of references there, so you know. This isn't just my opinion. I try to be a good reporter and give you the information from authoritative sources in a critical manner, so you know it's not just being delivered to you without some thinking going on. And, of course, there's so much wonderful good science, we're not passing it on to people who desperately need the help. It's askbillsardi.com, S-A-R-D-I at the end. And, of course, if you want to get to my books, you can find the portal there. And, of course, I do have, for those book readers who really love to read books, there's a book, The New Truth About Vitamins and Minerals. That's all about multivitamins and so on and what you need to know there. The Iron Time Bomb is how iron controls your life, particularly for males, and how the iron overload controls things in your life. The Bible Prescription for Health and Longevity is a new book that I just wrote, and it outlines all the wonderful provisions in the Bible and how people during Bible times were protected from disease and how we can tap into that knowledge and utilize it for ourselves today. And In Search of the World's Best Water was a fun book that I wrote because many people wonder about their drinking water. And should it be filtered? Yes, it should. And do we need bottled water? Maybe. And what should be in the water? Probably some magnesium if we can get it. So there's wonderful lessons there. These are all wonderful things to learn. If you go through the Bible, you'll see so many wonderful pieces of advice there on how to stay healthy. And, of course, we can learn them all if we just spend a moment, and we try to do the research for you. If you like reading books, we try to deliver and give you all that information free on Radio Liberty. So we hope you appreciate it here as it's given to you live.
And, of course, you go to the website, AskBillSardi.com. That's AskBillSardi.com, and then there are links to some of the other sites that to tell you about the books. Well, we lost Jeanette. If she'd like to call back, I would love to talk to her. That's Jeanette from Watsonville. Or if you're out there across America listening and you have a question or comment, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. You know, one of the things that really bothers me, Bill, is the way they manipulate the people and they manipulate the doctors. So you can't get measles or mumps or, let's see, it's the MMR, measles, rubella.
Rubella, right.
And you can't just, you have to get all three of them together. You can't get diphtheria and tetanus. It's very hard, although you can get that, but they usually want to give you DPT, diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis. Well, the pertussis had all sorts of problems with it. They used it for 20 years knowing that the children were getting autistic. They used it for 20 years knowing that children were having convulsions after it. And they had a very, very safe vaccine, a much safer vaccine that was available over in Japan, and they waited until the patent was run out on this one, and then they moved over to the and incorporated that. And how many children they injured by using a vaccine, the pertussis vaccine they knew was highly toxic, I don't know. But that's totally uncalled for. But the trouble is, when you work for government, you don't have to worry. You're never going to be punished if children die or have convulsions or become permanent epileptics. That's the parents' problem. That's not yours. After all, you're a scientist. And now, by putting these five vaccines together, and you talk about DPT and the polio and the hepatitis B, there's no justification for giving hepatitis B to children. You know, this is not a problem for them until they get up into their sexually active years, and then only if they are promiscuous or homosexuals or IV drug users, and because they won't act responsibly, they want to give it to every child who will act responsibly and who doesn't need it. I mean, this is totally uncalled for, but I'm sure it's very profitable for the vaccine manufacturers.
Well, at the marketing level of these pharmaceutical companies, particularly the vaccines, you know, they've had big meetings on how to now they can all tap into the vaccination marketplace. And, of course, as each vaccine is developed, they hope to get it locked into the system. That is your health plan, your employer, whatever. It's mandatory. And now these drug companies make billions of dollars. It's locked into the program, and, of course, the public has no choice. And so this is kind of what they're doing here, and, of course, you know, it's just it's really profit-driven. It's not driven by any real numbers that's reducing disease significantly. We're doing more with better hygiene, better diet, you know, cleaner water, those kind of things. We can do more, as we have throughout history, than we can with these vaccines. Now, that doesn't mean every vaccine is worthless. I know we may confuse some people. I mean, there is the risk of childhood meningitis and so on. You know, I worry about those things. And so if you want to sort that out, there is a wonderful book, What Your Doctor Won't Tell You About Childhood Vaccinations. It's by Stephanie Cave, C-A-V-E, Stephanie Cave, M.D. She's a full M.D. She treats autistic patients, and she can tell you which vaccines would be good for your children. So you don't have to fall for all of them. She'll tell you which ones. And, of course, she advises that when you go in, if your children are sick and you're taking them to the doctor, don't give them any vaccines when they're sick. That's the last time you want to do that. That is not when you want to do this. Try and make individual vaccinations. Of course, they're shoving five on us at a time. Make sure your children get a little vitamin C around the time that they're getting their vaccines, because that helps the vaccine work and cuts down the risk of side effects quite a bit. And certainly many times booster shots are given on these vaccines when they're not needed. The doctors can do what's called a titer level, that is, to figure out if the first shot that you got actually developed enough immunity so you don't need the booster shot, but doctors are lazy and just go ahead and do the booster shot. So once you get knowledgeable, to learn some of these rules and learn how to get around this a little bit, and make sure your doctor's working hard on your behalf so you don't just blindly have all these vaccines, and certainly make sure around children. Now, in the winter months when children are getting the flu and colds, you know, I do suggest that get more vitamin C in the children. There's a company called Alacer, A-L-A-C-E-R. They have a little fizzy vitamin C tablet you can stick in water, and it makes a little drink for the kids. You know, we got to find a way to get it to the kids, so there's a good little idea. Elderberry syrup when the kids get a little sick. Elderberry syrup, get it at the health food stores. That's wonderful. Cuts down the viruses and so on. So these are little tricks and little things that might help you with the very young children so that they don't get as sick and be very helpful.
Well, you know, what's really so disconcerting is that now they're doing everything they can to manipulate the parents. Of course, they want to give the hepatitis B in the nursery. Totally uncalled for. I mean, this is one of the most toxic of all the vaccines. There have been more adverse reports to the hepatitis B than any other vaccine we've ever had. And yet, of course, they still keep insisting on it here, where it is not a major problem. It is a major problem in other countries where there's very high incidence of it. But here we test mothers to find if they're hepatitis B positive. The mother isn't hepatitis B positive. Why are we giving the shot to the children? I believe it's a massive experiment. I believe that this is a massive experiment.
It has to be an experiment. I don't believe there is a vaccine on the labeling that says you should give it before 6 months of age. So if you're giving it in the nursery, it's probably against the label prescription. So right there. And I'm sure what they're doing is vaccinating the child and then giving the parents the piece of paper to sign afterwards. So this is the kind of thing that usually goes on.
And I would suggest if you are going to have a child and insist that they do not give them that hepatitis B shot, in the nursery, because children's immune systems are not set up for that, and you may be setting them up for all sorts of immune problems later on in life. And you better understand that there is an epidemic of asthma out there, and nobody wants to address the point that it's related to the vaccines, which are designed to promote an immune response in the child. And they say, oh, it's the children. They're animals in the house. That's the reason that those children have the asthma, is because they're animals in the house. How many houses have animals in them? And they've always had animals in them. And we don't have more animals now than we used to, but we sure got a lot more childhood asthma than we do. And nobody's going to address the issue. Because if you come out against vaccines, why, you probably believe that black helicopters, and you probably believe there was a conspiracy behind the assassination of John Kennedy, and obviously you are right-wing, a fanatic, irresponsible, and of course you're immediately marginalized and demonized. So our plea is, get the information. How can people get Stephanie Cave's book? In fact, it sounds like one we should be carrying.
Oh, yeah, it is, really. Maybe you should look into it. She is a wonderful doctor. She's down in Louisiana there in New Orleans. She does take care of autistic children, so this is how she knows. And, of course, you can find it on Amazon.com, which is simply what your doctor won't tell you about childhood vaccinations. And it's good advice, because you're going to have to sort out a few vaccines and live with them. And of course, she'll help you do that in that book. And, you know, I can't do it here on the radio. You're going to need something in your hands if you're a parent and so on, so you know you can do these kind of things. And be alert, be knowledgeable before you walk into these things. And of course, the system stacked against you, because, you know, they've got this all geared up and ready to go. And you walk in, boy, you're just, a victim waiting for the needle, so, or your children are. So,
I always like to ask them, have they taken the thimerosal out of the vaccines? Well, oh, yes, certainly they take it out. Well, why did they take it out? Well, it was harmful. Well, if it was harmful, then why did they give it for so many years?
Yeah, well, they were only coerced and pushed into this. And, of course, now the government has this big program. They say they're going to map out a government strategy to fight autism. This was in the New York Times here back the end of November. But then it goes into this, and you try to find out, what plan do they have? They don't have a clue. They know that the numbers are going up, and they know it's become a terrible epidemic. What they have is a plan to take care of the autistic children afterwards, not preventing this.
Right, and we're talking going from maybe 1 or 2 per 10,000. to one in every 250 to every 150. Do you really want to have your kids vaccinated, knowing that this is the end result? And why have they covered this thing up? And why did it really wasn't until the American Academy of Pediatrics, at the behest of some of the anti-vaccine people, finally said, well, you know, there is that thimerosal in there, and thimerosal is toxic to the brain. Maybe you ought to take it out. That yelling and screaming, they did take out most of it, but they put it in to sterilize this because they don't want to produce this in a sterile manner. They put the thimerosal in, it'll sterilize and kill everything, and then they want to give it to your child. Let's go to Rory calling from Watsonville. Hi, Rory. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing well, Dr. Stan.
Hey, we haven't heard from you in months.
I know. With 9 children, you can imagine I'm pretty busy. But
I know you are, and I think that's wonderful. I envy you.
Yeah, and it's interesting in this whole vaccine issue. I'm counseling a friend of mine that's a PhD, and her daughter's expecting, and she had no idea of any of this information, and I put her in touch with that National Vaccine Center.
Right.
And but it's interesting, I saw, as you're speaking of the thimerosal, I just saw a health bulletin on the flu shot, or the flu vaccine, and one of the caveats at the bottom for not taking it was if you had a mercury allergy because of the thimerosal. So apparently it's still being used in the flu vaccine.
It's still in there.
Yeah, so beware, people. The other question I had for Mr. Sardi was, what happened with the research done by that fellow named Whitaker out of England that showed a direct correlation with autism and the MMR combo vaccine, and then was able to show that if you split up the measles, mumps, rubella shots, that you lost the correlation or the incidence of autism dropped?
Right. Dr. Whitaker is a British doctor. He was recommending splitting up the doses so we wouldn't get
right.
3-1 and 5-1. And, of course, he was marginalized there. He's been cast aside. He's been, everything bad said about him. And, of course, all he did was recommend this. But in the meantime, we have another credible source, Dr. Mark Geyer, MD, PhD, president of the Genetic Centers of America. And he and his son, David Geyer, have looked into this issue of the mercury and the autism. They've gone over the point of how much mercury these children are getting. And what happened was, this was all outlined, by the way, on WorldNet Daily, and I'll use his words here in the story. He says, we went to Atlanta to the CDC. We looked into the vaccination data. There is thimerosal-containing diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis vaccine, and thimerosal-free. So what we did is we asked the CDC a question. We said, show us the data between the two groups, the one that got the one that had more thimerosal and the new thimerosal-free, which we know still has traces of it in. And
yes.
Here he says we found mega-dose differences, more than 20 times higher rate of autism in the children getting the higher thimerosal-laced vaccines. And he says, there is not a scientific issue here. This is fraud. And, of course, he's fingering the Centers for Disease Control, the Food and Drug Administration. They're outright lying to us.
In fact, you remember that what they put in the Office of Homeland Security legislation, at the middle of the night, they snuck into this, I don't know how many, 100-page report, a special exclusion so that Eli Lilly could never be sued for the thimerosal, which they manufacture and is put in other people's vaccines. And when it finally came out, they said, we have to protect the vaccine manufacturers. After all, if we don't have that in there, Eli Lilly would stop making vaccines. Well, that's true. Eli Lilly stopped making vaccines back in the 1970s. The only thing they've manufactured is the poison they've been giving to our children. And fortunately, there was such an outcry by the people in America that they had to take that out. But that's what they do, and you have to understand that this administration is working hand in glove with it. glove with the drug companies, and this whole new legislation, this $40 billion a year, is simply a matter of transferring money from the poor people in a rich country to the people who control the drug industry in a rich country. Who's going to end up with that $40 billion? The drug industry, and they're all friends of the people who control both of our political parties. And when are the American people going to wake up?
Yeah.
We have people who are totally irresponsible in positions of power in this country.
People have to take charge, and I know that's what you preach, Bill, but people have to take charge of their own health. And I, you know, we had our last two children at home, so we didn't have to deal with the pushy nurse trying to get them to give a hepatitis B shot to our infant. But the third from the bottom, or the number would be number seven child, they in Watsonville, they tried to push that on my wife, but she knew what was going on. She said, absolutely not. I will not sign that release. You're not giving her a B shot. No way. You do, we'll sue you.
Well,
so
you know,
she backed them off.
Right. Dr. Stan is talking about asthma in children, and in the December issue of the American Journal of Respiratory and Critical Care Medicine, and by the way, this report was published ahead of print. They thought it so important. And that is, in the Netherlands, they just looked at children. This is a freshly printed study. And among asthmatic children getting the influenza shots, that is the flu vaccine, more of these asthmatic children seem to have exacerbations of their asthma than did a placebo group, that is the one that just got an inactive shot. So, you know, it's considerable. It's about a 33% increase. So you can see that, it's triggering off and making asthma worse.
I'll tell you, Bill, what got us, even before I heard some of Dr. Stan's guests, National Vaccine Center, et cetera, when our daughter, who was born premature, we held off purposely. We said, hey, we'll wait till she's over a year before she gets her vaccine going. And so after a year old, and she was a preemie, but she was healthy. She had no problems. We started her on the normal regimen of vaccines, and she started becoming sickly. It was incredible. It was like night and day. And so we stopped them like midway. We said, something's going on here. We didn't know, but something's not right with this picture. And she and one of the older kids are asthmatics. And I know, I can't prove it, but I know something in those vaccines triggered immune responses in her that bring on asthma. And as she's getting older, she's seven now, we're able to control it with albuterol. And sometimes we have to put her on a prednisone to kind of nip something in the bud. But, you know, she got asthma, which led to pneumonia.
All your children need to be put on some fish oil of some kind. Nordic Naturals makes a wonderful little chewable fish oil in strawberry flavor. Nordic Naturals.
Yeah, they're here in Watsonville.
They're right there in Watsonville. The chewable strawberry-flavored fish oil. The children are smarter. This is the little fish fat that the brain needs, but it calms down immune reactions, autoimmune reactions, and it's great for your young children.
Yeah, give them flaxseed, Bill. Is that
flaxseed is wonderful, too. Again, flaxseed, I prefer flax meal these days, and we don't have the time to go into that, but a tablespoon of flaxseed meal for adults, maybe a teaspoon for children. Again, that has all the wonderful oils, too. You can add it to the children's cereals and so on. It'll get them the oils and things they need. So,
and that helps with the immune response?
Yeah, you bet it does. And, you know, fish oils and things work like, to reduce inflammation and so on, similar to steroids, but not with all the side effects of steroids. So, we really need this for our children, is to get them the essential oils. By the way, when we talk about children and vaccinations, the best vaccination you can get is, of course, breast milk. Mommy has certain immune factors in her breast milk that she shoots into the child, and of course the first milk of any animal, and mommy's, is called colostrum. It's the first milk. And the colostrum is really loaded with immune factors in order to really protect that newborn baby. So, you know, breastfeeding is real important, and use nature's way of doing this. The first milk from mom, the colostrum, has much more shot into the baby, and then, of course, they have this super protection right from the beginning of life.
That's wonderful. Bill, where do you find the Nordic Naturals? A website or do certain stores?
Well, Nordic Naturals is sold through various stores. You'll probably have to go through various stores. Lifespan Nutrition, who advertises on Dr. Stan's show, you can find them at lifespannutrition.com. They sell it and so on at a discount. So, you know, there are different people that do that, and I hate to plug anybody there. Just find it and use it because it's a wonderfully pure, beautiful product. Has no heavy metals in there. They've done a wonderful job, and it's all ready to go for your children. I should say, for the very, very young children, it's more appropriate to use fish oil because it's already been processed through a fish's body, and it's ready because it's gone through the fish's liver, and it's metabolized and ready to go. In adults, we get flax oil, and we need to convert it in our liver, but a child's liver, a very young child, is not capable of doing that yet. So the fish oil is more appropriate for very, very young children from newborns on. By the way, for all you moms out there, if you want a full-term baby, get on the fish oil during your pregnancy. It'll ensure a longer gestation period, a less chance of having a premature infant. You can stop the fish oil or flax oil 2 weeks before your due date. That'll just about induce an on-time baby, and then go back on it again when you're breastfeeding.
Why don't you put out that telephone number for a Lifespan? I know it's an 800 number. Go ahead.
Yeah, 866-405-4000, 866-405-4000, and they can help you with some of those things. But they may need
that
to call
your website,
you.
Bill?
Yeah, lifespannutrition.com. But they may need to... if you can't find all the answers there, leave your number and they'll call you back in the morning so they can spend time to educate you, because some people do have more intense questions and so on.
Sure.
But, you know, the whole issue is for us to get armed with this information, find good products, get them at a discount, save your money, but basically save your health. And of course, these children are naturally protected. Just use nature's protection for them where you can. Vaccines are important. Choose them, pick them carefully, and don't let them overrun you. And that's probably why we're going to have to pull our kids out of the school systems.
Well, you know, they've got people thinking that their children cannot either go into high school or graduate if they haven't been vaccinated. And I've told a number of people that's just simply not true.
Let me tell you what a farce this is. The immigrants are coming over the border in the thousands with their children. We do nothing. And while they're forcing all of us into the vaccine. I mean, I'm laughing. Where are the epidemics? They're coming over here in droves. And by the way, if you want hepatitis, that's where it's coming from. So,
my wife had a premature baby because she and two of our daughters got hepatitis A from a fast food restaurant in Watsonville.
That's right.
So, you know, somebody there wasn't being very...
That's right. What you're getting is an immigrant worker who's working in the back,
and
they're not washing their hands and so on, so you're getting a body fluid contact into the food, and then you end up getting hepatitis.
And the county health department here said they get a case a week of hepatitis A in Santa Cruz County from
fast food. Now, the whole reason for us having immigration laws was that people had to pass through, you know, some sort of a health screen and
Absolutely.
Some sort of a legal screen. Now this is all just washed away, and we've forgotten that these people bring anything from innocuous lice with them all the way up to these things like hepatitis. In particular, TB is a good one because these people have very poor nutrition, and they come in breathing the TB bug, and they'll spread it around.
Rory, I'm going to have to let you go because we've got Dave calling. He's been very patient.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you,
Bob.
Good to hear from you. Let's go to Dave. Hi, Dave. How are you doing?
Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for a lively, invigorating, and timely, topical conversation, and quite necessary all the way around. I've been an opponent of a lot of the vaccination regimes that have been going on in this country for a long time, and I think it causes a terrible shock if it's not done properly. I think it's part of why we have Gulf War syndrome. But I not to really radically change the direction of the conversation, but I did want to ask your guest... what his thoughts were on increased use of technologies like cell phones and garage door openers and things that create microwave radiation, because some of the articles I've been reading have pointed to the rise in autism has been concurrent with a rise in saturation with microwave radiation,
right.
electromagnetic stuff.
Right.
So,
right.
The
problem there is that we would have this, if this was true, it would happen among, you know, even more children, and we would see it among more and more people. Even in adults, you'd see issues and so on. I'm not negating this. There are other issues there. I think that we're where a cell phone may be, you know, said to be safe and so on. We do have accumulated exposure to these things, and so we do get interested in that. By the way, your infrared is a heat wave, and it's really not as dangerous as some other forms of radiation that we have. And, of course, I think it's... let me put it to you this way. When we look at the reason why I say about autism in the world, we see it rising in every country. And look, every country is different. They got different foods, they got different cultures, they got different things. What is it that's universal in all of those countries? I mean, we're not talking about countries that have cell phones now.
Yeah.
And the thing that's universal is the vaccine. That is the universal thing. And of course, they're hiding this because I understand they don't want us to lose confidence in the public vaccination system, but at the same time, look what they're doing here. They're just protecting, it's become commercial. They're protecting the drug companies rather than, you know, protecting the children. This is what they're doing. They're, so we have confidence to line our children up and make money for drug companies. It's not about protecting children anymore. That went out the door a long time ago.
Well, it's certainly interesting that no matter, I've listened to Radio Liberty before, and I think that they brought it up quite rightly, that major corporate interests seem to be supplanting our country's values, and our own personal safety keeps coming up short when it comes to people.
Well, Dave, you're both right, but we're out of time. Dave, we do have a book called Earth Rising 2 that goes into the cell phones, and we've done a couple of programs on that. I think you're right, but I got to let you go. Thanks for calling, and Bill, I want to thank you so much for being with us tonight, but we get involved, and we're out of time.
Okay.
Good night. God bless. Okay, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest has been Bill Sardi. Hope you've enjoyed the program. Please pray for America, pray for revival, and pray for Radio Liberty. Good night.